Hey, Carrie.
Hey, Jacob.
Hi. And hello to everyone who's listening. We're this is the Love You Like Crazy podcast, where we talk about young adult fiction. And the book that we're going to talk about today, well, what is it, Carrie?
It is Ready Player One by Ernest Cline.
Yeah, a lot of 80s stuff. Lots of it takes place in a dystopic future, and we enjoyed it a lot. So, we're gonna talk about lots of things about the plot and the characters and stuff. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, stop the podcast now, read the book, which we recommend you doing, and then come back and listen to the rest of it.
Read this book.
That's right. And then next time we're going to talk about a book called Fallout featuring Lois Lane, and it's by Gwenda Bond. So if you want to get prepared for that one, you can read that one as well. But for now, let's just get to the book.
Let's do that.
All right. Apparently, the paper versions of the first edition had clues to some kind of game in them that you could...
It did, where you could win a DeLorean.
Yeah.
I did not have said paperback copy because I downloaded it from the interwebs and therefore was not going to win the contest. Nor do I really have the time and energy to spend, like so many people in the book did, in order to win billions of dollars.
Well, if it were billions of dollars, I mean, the DeLorean is pretty cool. But
billions of dollars is kind of cooler.
Becoming the richest person in the world.
Maybe worth your time and effort.
Yeah. Let's see.
So up front, I think just talking a little bit about the book, you know, that there is this giant world that people live in virtually. And Wade or Parzival goes to school in this world, as do many students his age. They go to school virtually. And a lot of the world building that Ernest Cline, you know, he does explain, you know, exactly how it works. There's no question I know exactly how their schools work because, you know, he does spend multiple chapters talking about school and talking about the different things and also talking about, you know, all the different worlds that they can go to and how that they were created by, you know, Halliday and who Halliday was. There is a lot of backstory, but I just keep babbling. But, you know, there's this world in which these people are hunting for the Easter egg that Halliday hid in their world, is part of his will, and they have been trying to decipher for years exactly where this could be. But there's so many places in this universe that it could possibly be. And of course, you know, our hero who can do no wrong, I'm sorry, but he can't, mm-hmm. is the one to find it. And of course, it's a high school student. Of course, it's not some, you know, I don't know, Gunter who's been at this for years. And Gunter is what they call the egg hunters. But just this guy with his Grail diary who knows the 80s better than anyone else, and his friends. So he's got his friends H and his friend Artemis, mm-hmm. who is the love interest. And while they're helping him through it, they're also helping themselves through it because they all say that they're lone wolves. And that's sort of a little bit about the story itself. It's just, you know, there's this guy trying to find the Easter egg, which is worth billions of dollars, as are his friends. That's all I got. That's the backstory, people.
You want to talk about the enemies?
Oh, there are some enemies. Yeah, so the enemies are the Sixers, or IOI, and they're sort of in it to... And what's the main bad guy's name? What the hell is his name? Sorrento. Nolan Sorrento.
Yeah.
So Nolan Sorrento is the head of IOI. It's IOI, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Innovative Online Industries.
Yes. Yeah, so he's the head of that ship. Basically, what he wants to do is he wants to get the Easter egg and own the majority share of the Oasis, which is the online world, so he can put ads and shit in it and make even more monkeys.
Yeah, I took some notes on what IOI was what their agenda was, which was a monthly fee for access, which in
because
the,
right now it's just a quarter, right?
Right. A quarter for a lifetime access to this, to the Oasis.
Mm-hmm.
And they make their money by renting out space to different companies.
So they're already making a shit ton of money off of this.
Yeah, apparently. And then it says ubiquitous advertisements.
There already are advertisements. I mean, it's basically advertisements for Halliday. He's such a narcissist. Everything is all about him.
Yeah, it's all about the 80s.
And, you know, of course, if there are giant malls there, there are storefronts. There's some sort of
That's a good point.
Advertisement that's already in this world, but they, I guess they want, you know, banner ads to flash in front of your eyes when you're, you know, all suited up.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I just feel like there's already, I mean, there's already so much money in this that IOI is just going to make like all the money ever made if they get the Easter egg. So that's, I think what, you know, their agenda is just to fuck shit up even further.
Yeah. And then it's an end of anonymity and free speech, which I think is, I mean, you know, that like that was kind of a controversial part of Google Plus, that you weren't allowed to use a fake name to register.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook has had some issues with that, too. And I think free speech, I'm guessing that's in the context of like anonymous free speech.
Yeah.
This book kind of reminded me of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Really? It reminded me of Ender's Game in the fact that in this book, Wade or Parzival is fucking perfect. He just keeps winning at everything. And therefore, I hate him just a little bit.
That's fair.
He reminds you of Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Well, Charlie, because, you know, like there's this crazy rich person who wants to give away his business to, you know, find an heir.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's this kind of bizarre contest of sorts. And the protagonist ends up winning and gets the...
Yeah. Or the Westing Game. I mean, it's a tale as old as time, right?
Yeah.
Crazy guy comes up with a crazy contest and people have to fight, to win the millions or billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So yeah, I see what you're saying.
Should we talk about the Westing Game sometime?
Talk about the Westing Game sometime. I love the Westing Game.
Yeah, that would be really fun to talk about. All right.
So about this book, though.
So you were saying how Parzival is the best of everyone and can do no wrong. I mean, I thought that one thing the book. I think that's basically true. But one of the things I liked that the book did was it undercut it a little bit. Like Artemis is clearly better at figuring out the riddles than he is, you know, mm-hmm. because she finds the hill first, and then she also figures when he reaches the very end and there's that game of Tempest, she's like, oh, of course it's Tempest. I knew that, you know, that was obvious from the...
I knew it was going to be Tempest from minute one.
Yeah, and then she also knew the thing that he needed to actually be able to beat it, how to get the extra lives or whatever.
Yeah. But yet she wasn't the one who won. It was still him.
Right.
Even though she probably should have.
Yeah. Totally. This book is also, we both like this book a lot, right?
Oh, I would say I love this book. I think it is so much fun. I mean, I think it, you know, especially for people in, you know, generally our age demographic, you know, it's just like... nostalgia and wish fulfillment all at once.
Right.
You know, we all want to, you know, not only sort of relive the cool parts of the 80s and, you know, we also want to be multi-billionaires who run the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I loved it. But, I mean, there are problems with it. Like, there's a problem with any book because, you know, of course, I feel like Ernest Cline probably wrote this book as a labor of love. You know, I'm sure there's so much of himself in Wade, you know, just because of, you know, I think that there probably is. Maybe that's me projecting, but
mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm glad you liked it though.
Yeah. So it's sort of within the context of that we're kind of talking about the flaws. And one of the things that I noticed was, I mean, I think particularly because we read it right after we did Rewind.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we talked about in the Rewind episode is how...
It's Unwind, by the way.
Well, I don't know what things are called.
It's a book. It has the word wind in it. Shut up, Carrie.
Unwind. Yeah. One of the things about the book Unwind is, you know, that Neil Schusterman did in that book was when there was some big thing about the world, for the most part, he wouldn't tell you about it right away. Like with, you know, the exploding people, clappers. with the clappers, he doesn't really explain what they are until two thirds of the way through the book, but there are like details put in early in, which sort of build this anticipation. So when you finally find out what their deal is, like you're really interested in learning it. This book is, has a lot of info dumping, like the first eight chapters, a lot of the first eight chapters is just like setting the scene, you know?
Yeah.
The first chapter is all like, so here's this world. And there's this guy, and he invented this thing, and then he died, and there was a will. And then 5 years passed, and then, hey, and then someone finally showed up on the high score list, and it was me. So, and then the next chapter is like, okay, so here's my life in the real world. And then the next chapter is like, here's my life in the online world. And then, you know, nothing really. Chapter three, I think we finally meet some of the other characters and we get to see people actually interact.
Yeah.
And then chapter eight is when he actually finds the thing. But it's just very information heavy. And I feel like that could have been done a little more, you know, in a way that was a little less, well, here's a bunch of information for your stupid face.
Your stupid face.
Yeah. You know, but then, I mean, things get rolling pretty good and... I don't know, like I was thinking of what my favorite parts of the book were, and there were two parts that sort of stood out for me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And one is when he sort of goes on a wild goose chase. He thinks, because there's the clue that says he has to collect the awards or collect the trophies, and so he thinks that maybe it's, I guess there's a trophy room in this planet of video video game consoles, old arcade games.
Yeah.
So he goes to that, but it turns out he's wrong about that. And then when he's just kind of wandering around, he stumbles across a thing which seems like it shouldn't quite be there. This recreation of this pizza place from that Halloway used to go to. And he goes in there and finds this game of Pac-Man and plays that. And I really kind of enjoyed that. And I think the reason why is because that's where you really get a chance to kind of see. I feel like that's where you really kind of get a chance to see what it would be like to actually inhabit this world and like sort of go around exploring and finding weird things and, you know, and so on. So I enjoyed that because it was, I think, even though, I mean, maybe it's a little weird to think of it that way, but kind of because it wasn't directly related to the main plot, but was just like going around exploring the world and seeing what it's like. So I liked that part a lot.
Yeah, I can totally see that. You know, I think because I've read this book a bunch of times, I sort of forget that there is that magic of exploration. It's not just like, oh, I can hop from world to world and I can be an ogre or an elf. It's, yeah, you can, you know, sort of discover something cool and new in this world that was created for you.
And then he gets that quarter, which then later turns out to be incredibly important. But for a long time, you just kind of...
You forget about it entirely.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I did. I was like, oh, yeah, quarter. Okay, that might be important later. But then out of sight, out of mind for me. You know, it's in his inventory, but... It's not in mind, so I'm not thinking about it.
And then the other part that I that kind of stood out for me is when he, you know, he has his plan to infiltrate the actual innovative online industries place by getting caught, you know, for owing them money and getting put into indentured servitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think I kind of like that for similar reasons. Like, I mean, even though there, it's obviously it is related to an overall goal, even though he doesn't really reveal how it works for a while. But it's kind of, it's a way of exploring the quote real end quote world. So you get kind of a sense of what it, what normal people who aren't necessarily Gunters are going through in their kind of day to day. So I kind of like appreciated that world building. And then also there was a, there's a whole tech support telecommunity aspect that I can, that I want to talk about at some point, but I feel like I've been,
you can relate in some way.
Yeah. I feel like I've been dominating the conversation so far. So I don't know, so far. So I don't know. Did you have favorite parts that you wanted to point out?
I'd say some of my favorite parts were, you know, him actually sort of getting it. Like when he was in Halliday's house and he was, you know, sort of figuring it out how to get through the first gate. I thought that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, how Halliday had set up this contest and how long it must have taken him to create this contest and how detailed and nuanced this was. And just seeing, you know, Wade figure it all out was really, really interesting to me because I would never have done that. I am, you know, I'm pretty good with puzzles, but mm-hmm. not anything this detailed and this immense. This was a really, really, you know, huge contest. And I really liked that. I'd say him going into Halliday's house, the description of the house, the description of the trash 80, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I enjoyed that because that was for me part of my childhood. You know, my first computer was a trash 80. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time in video game land as a kid. And so, you know, reading about this other kid who didn't have any friends, who spent all of his time on a computer, I really enjoyed that. And so when Wade was living that life or living in his, in Halliday's world, I really liked that, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that Halliday's home was nostalgic for him, but I'm not sure. And even Wade says this, he's like, I don't know why he was so nostalgic for this house, for this home, because his home life sucked.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I felt for him.
Mm-hmm. The book has kind of a strange relationship to Halliday, where he's both is kind of this barely human figure, but then he's also a hero to Parzival and the other characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. That was kind of interesting, but, so we're supposed, like early on, we're supposed to kind of suspect that H is actually like Halliday or some contemporary of Halliday's, right?
I don't know. I did not suspect that.
Oh, okay.
But maybe that's because I'm a stupid.
Maybe that's because you're a smart. Because obviously, because H ends up being a young black lesbian.
Yeah, it's true. She does.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, on one hand, I really was happy that there was, you know, a lesbian of color, because that's so not common in books, in contemporary fiction, and in contemporary young adult fiction. But I was also really disappointed in this dystopian future that she still had to hide who she was online.
Yeah.
She still had to be a boy. She still had to be a white boy. And that really disappointed me. I was like, that future sucks.
Well, it kind of does suck.
Well, I mean, yes, it does. When people live in trailers stacked on top of each other, I mean, that's not cool. But I was just really disappointed that not only was it this dystopian future, but it still had racism and sexism.
Right. I mean, again, that's kind of contrasts with Rewind in a way, where in Rewind, it's claimed at least that there isn't really racism anymore. Whereas in this one, it seems like it's, you know, it's alive and well. And the way that, you know, there are just ways of working around it because the Oasis makes it easier to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And at one point he was, you know, flirting with Artemis online, and he was saying, oh, you're a guy, aren't you? You're a guy named Curtis, and ha, ha, ha. And then when he met H, and it was a woman, he was just like, wait, what the fuck? You lied to me?
Right.
Isn't that the point of the internet?
Well, yeah. I feel like the book kind of had to pay off the indication that, because it said, you know, it's kind of emphasized multiple times that you don't really know what people look like in real life, and they could be completely different from what they're projecting. But Parzival himself basically looks like his online persona, you know, I guess with less acne or something.
Yeah.
And and Artemis, I guess, has a birthmark that she doesn't like, but other than that, is basically the same. So there had to be someone who is completely different. But do you mind if I just return for a moment to why I thought H might be Halliday, or why I thought that maybe we're supposed to think that?
Absolutely. I mean, it might be just the name H.
Right. That was one thing. But also, like, H is kind of this mysterious figure. I guess I'm going to call him he for now, even though in the real world it's she, because the online persona, like when we meet H, the presentation is that H is male. I don't know. Maybe that's the wrong choice for me to make, but that's what I'm going to do for now anyway. H is this kind of mysterious figure, and he has this chat room that people are invited to. And he's like an expert on 80s stuff. Like he and Parzival are basically the two people who go to the chat room who seem to know more than anyone, really. And like they do a lot of high-fiving of each other in a way that's kind of obnoxious and that plays into what you were saying earlier about that. And then let's see, what were some other things? I mean, you remember when they find the first gate, they have to play Joust.
Yeah.
And Parzival knows about Joust because H had previously gotten him to play it a lot.
Oh, so you're thinking, there's a little foreshadowing.
Yeah, that H is maybe, you know, like he knows that it's going to come up and he likes this guy and thinks that he should win. So he's tipping him these little subtle clues or things that will help him along the way. They both go to school on the actual planet where the thing, where the first gate is.
But why would Halliday go to high school?
Well, he has to go. I mean, it's kind of a perfect cover because everyone has all of the kids have to go to high school. I mean, I'm defending a theory that is obviously completely wrong, but, and that's where the first gate is. So it kind of allows him to, keep an eye on what's going on and also to like scope out kids who might be good, you know, who might be good for the game, I guess, in some way.
Kids that will get the golden ticket.
Right. And then when the Sixers get in touch with Parzival, they tell him that they know exactly who he is and where he is, and that they also know who Artemis is and where she is. And they weren't able to figure out who H was, but they were working on it. And so, like, there's a case where, you know, he's kind of a mysterious figure, and you think, well, could he be? Maybe, but...
Turns out he's just better at covering his tracks than Wade is.
Right. Well, she gave a incorrect identity to cover up the fact that, in fact, she is a black woman. That was something that her mother suggested, I believe.
Yes.
So I thought that was a nice little red herring. Yep.
So let's see, some of the other characters, you know, James Halliday, obviously the guy who created this world, but his former partner, Ogden Morrow,
yeah.
Who I love Ogden Morrow. I think he's fantastic. I want to like snuggle up to him.
Yeah. He's kind of the public face of the company. You know, he has the social graces where Halliday is more not good with people.
Yeah, I think they said, you know, Halliday would just get up in the middle of interviews and walk out when he got bored.
Yeah.
First, Ogden Morrow kind of didn't do that.
Right.
But he also had, you know, created his house to look like, was it Rivendell?
Yes. Yeah, I believe that's right.
Which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I would like that. I would like to go to his house. I thought he was a really interesting, cool character, and the fact that, you know, he was pretty upfront about things for the most part. You know, hey, we had a falling out. Here's why. That sucks.
Yeah.
He was a good guy, I think, for the most part. He really wanted, you know, he really wanted to help the kids as much as he could. Maybe because he was spying on them.
Well, yeah, there was that whole thing.
You'd think the guy who had the magical, mystical powers of invisibility.
Right. Maybe wouldn't knock over piles of books.
Maybe wouldn't do that, but, you know, and that's the thing that really sort of struck me. They're like, oh, some books fell over. Must be a glitch in the Matrix. Rather than, hey, what the fuck was that shit? Like, let's investigate.
Yeah, maybe we should look into that.
Nancy Drew would not have just walked away.
I know. She would have fallen through a couple of floors and found the hidden staircase.
Exactly.
Yep. We're bringing together all of the different books we talked about.
Ever.
So it was. Would you agree that it was kind of lame that Halliday and Og, like the reason, the main reason for they had a fight was because of a woman they were both interested in?
Yep. I thought that was pretty cheesy.
Yep.
I thought that was going to happen with Parzival and Artemis and H. And I'm glad it didn't. Although it would have been baller if Artemis and H had gotten together at the end and Wade was like, hey, what the fuck? I thought I was the chosen one.
That's true. That would be great. And then they'd have a majority stake in the company together, too.
That would have been fantastic. But alas, he gets the girl because he can do no wrong, because he is Parzival. And H is like, what the fuck? But I don't know. I think sometimes I feel like Parzival, if he were around now, I have a feeling he'd own a fedora.
Well, you know, I was thinking, I felt like, so I don't know, you've heard of like Gamergate, right?
Of course I have. I am a gamer.
Yeah. So I feel like the Oasis seems like a place that where gamer gators would just thrive.
Oh my God, of course they would. And that's why I was really disappointed that there was still, you know, sexism and racism in the Oasis. Like, fucking God damn it! They're still winning!
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Artemis, she must have to put up with so much crap, you know?
Of course she does. Of course she does. And the fact that, you know, there's just another guy saying, you know, minute one, I think I love you.
Yeah.
Why don't you love me, you whore? Of course she's not going to say anything back. She's done with this shit. She deals with this all the time. You're just another friggin' fanboy to her.
Yeah.
Until you're not.
Right. Well.
Because he's, you know, he's the greatest. So, of course, he's going to get the love at the end. Of course, he's going to get her at the end. And, of course, you know, he wins the bajillions of dollars and, you know, saves the Oasis from IOI.
I thought, they say early on that the Sixers are also called as Suxors.
Yeah.
With a zero for O, which I'm glad for the most part they just called them Sixers throughout the book. That would have been a little hard to take. But do you think that's like a Number of the Beast thing?
I would say that that's probably the case. Maybe not a blatant Number of the Beast, but obviously, you know, they're not. Their name starts with six. There are six digits, and they're called Sixers.
Right, and they're a legion.
They're a legion.
Oh, you know there's got to be a Nancy Drew planet in the Oasis someplace. Oh,
of course there is. I want to go.
Yeah, you would live there.
I would totally live there. I would, I don't know. I might sometimes get a little mad at Nancy, But that's okay.
We assume that this Nancy Drew would be closer to the ones in the video games.
Oh, I would hope so. Yeah. I mean, if it is a video game-based planet, I would think that, you know, it would be more modern and less pinafores and minuets.
Minuets, yes. this is something, you know, another detail that I thought was funny. It's initially described how the haptic suits work.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is you wear these sunglasses, and this is a sentence that I thought was funny. It used harmless, low-powered lasers to draw the stunningly real environment of the Oasis right onto its wearer's retinas. And I thought that was funny because, like, that sentence with the word harmless removed just sounds so horrific.
So, thanks for clarifying, buddy.
Yeah, so just to be clear, harmless. Anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about. I do want to talk about telecommuting a little.
Okay, let's do that.
So when Parzival goes on the lam, like for the first time in his life, he actually has money because he managed to collect a bunch of gold while going on the quest to get the first key.
He also sold out immediately too. Don't forget that.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Right. Yeah, he made it.
He got a lot of money just by saying, like, "Yeah, sure, I'll say I endorse that shit. Just give me some money."
Yeah, I know. I thought that was interesting that he just did that. There was like not even any question. But you know, he grew up. I mean, I suppose it didn't seem out of character. I was a little surprised that Ernest Cline had him do that, but it actually kind of made sense. And there are never really any consequences to that, other than that he gets some money. So. In the book. So he has this money, but he's still, it's not enough that he can basically just retire and working on gunting full time. So he gets this apartment with high speed internet, and then he gets a job doing tech support. And so my own existence is basically that I do tech support from my apartment. I'm a telecommuter. So I'm just, you know, I felt like I just thought it was kind of funny how, you know, like I just sit at my computer all day, more or less. I recently got a walking desk, which I feel, again, is not so far different from what he did in the book of like, oh, gee, maybe I need to exercise every once in a while. So I'm just not, don't turn into a giant pound of flabby goo. You know, so I sit at my desk all day, and maybe I get food through, you know, an online delivery service. You know, it's like all the same. And then when he puts his plan in place to infiltrate IOI, he goes to work there, and he's again doing tech support, but he's no longer telecommuting, and I feel like. The portrayal of like the horrors of having to actually go to an office and do work where people can like actually see what you're doing, and you can't go on Facebook or whatever.
Oh my God, that would be awful.
Yeah. So I thought that
I have to go to an office. I will admit that, but my monitors are turned away from the door. No one can ever see what I'm doing.
That's key.
That is really, really key.
Yeah. So that was funny to me. Yeah, the first job, my first job out of college, I worked for an internet startup in Manhattan. And they at that point in time, they were growing faster than they had office space to easily accommodate. So the tech support department was in a windowless room in an office owned by a neighboring company. So no one really had any idea where we were and could not find us. They could only send us email, and it was like, great. That was the best.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
I mean, it wasn't so great when the DBAs would make microwave popcorn and burn it. That's the worst. But not being able to be found by your coworkers is great. And having to go to an office where people can actually track you down and yell at you is not – if I don't have to do that again, that's great.
I think you can probably make that happen. So can I talk about the creepiest thing that Parzival does in this book?
Yes, please do.
So when he has locked himself in his apartment and he is...
Oh, I know what you're going to talk about.
...doing his thing.
Yep.
He has a suit that he wears.
He does.
A haptic suit. But to make sure that this haptic suit works just right, he shaves himself. His whole self. Tip to tail, eyebrows and all.
Yeah.
That shit's fucked up. Homeboy looks like a goddamn naked mole rat in his apartment, which has, like, super locks, and he's blacked out the windows, and he's a friggin' walking penis in this room with this super suit on. Like, for real, that's fucked up.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. I don't know. I feel like the book doesn't play it up exactly, although I think it was definitely in the author's mind, but the sort of contrast between his kind of pathetic real-life existence where he never leaves, you know, this tiny apartment and online where he's a badass is...
He shaves his eyebrows.
Right, okay. Yeah, he does. And also, like, he's super ripped. He gets the exercise equipment because he's getting too fat to fit into it.
Yes, he does.
So first of all, there's, like, completely shaved parts of all when he's fat and out of shape. So that's one image for you. And then the other is incredibly ripped Parzival, still with no hair anywhere.
Yeah. Because there's got to be the montage where he gets ripped.
I don't want to see that montage.
You know, if there's a movie, there's going to be a montage. Who shaves his back?
Well, doesn't he use, like, Nair or something? Some kind of...
Maybe. I don't remember. I just know that he is hairless tip to tail, and that freaks me out. Like, that's super creepy. Like, out of all the things that he does that I think are a little kind of creepy, that's the creepiest. You know, telling a girl that you've just met, like, I kind of want to have all your babies, oh my God!
Yeah.
She's like, you know, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog, right?
Like, right.
Dude. And he, you know, is kind of creepy. And then, you know, he is the greatest Gunter in the face of Gunters. Like, all the Gunters need to bow down to him. And he's just this creepy, hairless guy in a room, alone.
I feel like Artemis...
There's a lot about him that I don't like.
Yeah. No, yeah. And I thought you were going to mention him ordering that sex doll.
Oh, the fucking sex doll! I couldn't even remember the sex doll! And it was like... He got bored of her pretty quick. He did all that he could do with that sex doll, and then
that was creepy enough that it even creeped out him. And he's like, you know what? Maybe this is a little further than I want to go.
Imagine having to tell your online girlfriend that you lost your virginity to plastic.
Well, sure. That's a tough conversation to have. I guess when you're merging your apartments, that's going to be a tough one. Oh, and here's my sex doll.
Do you think they're going to have to unblack the windows? I guess we're going to need to let the light in, honey.
Here's the razor blade with the extra long handle so I can do my back.
Can you get my butt? I want to go shave my taint now, honey.
There's one spot that I can never reach. It's so I'm so happy I have you now, honey.
I put this little patch of grass on my backside. I need some help.
Oh, God.
But we loved this book. That's the thing. We're seeing a lot of flaws in it because, you know, it's a first novel. And
right.
I think that there's a lot, you know, a lot that could have been different, a lot that we would have liked to be different. But beyond that, it's a really fun book and totally worth reading because it's so much fun and so detailed and so much a labor of love where somebody loved the 80s so much where they and were such a friggin' geek. I mean, that they created this book about this other guy who was also obsessed with the same things he was. I mean, that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fun to read. And it's sort of, you know, it's a nostalgia trip for me, you know, thinking about this kid in 2044, you know, listening to They Might Be Giants because of this guy who was born just a few years before I was.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the Rippy Giants are name dropped in this book. Yay.
Yeah, at one point, the phrase, no one in the world ever gets what they want, and that is beautiful, is dropped.
It's true. Everybody dies frustrated and sad, and that is beautiful.
It's true. Don't let's start, Carrie.
So this is Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. We had a lot of shit to say about it.
We did. Yeah. I think it's fun. It's more fun to talk about flaws a lot of the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to be like, this book was perfect. The end.
Right.
So what are we going to read next time?
Hold on. So this is a book. I forget where I heard about this book, but it's called Fallout, and it's by Gwenda Bond. And when was it released?
It's pretty recently released, wasn't it?
Yes. I think it's pretty new. And it features a young Lois Lane before she meets Superman. But it's set sort of, in a present day or maybe near future world. I mean, with superheroes, so there's that. But,
oh, of course.
So I started reading it. I've read like the first few chapters, and it kind of seems like it seems like a fun book, nice, well-written, good characters. I kind of feel like it's a little bit like what we might have wanted the Nancy Drew book to be more like.
Well, then I am really excited. I haven't started reading it yet, but now that it is in my Kindle, I am really, really stoked.
Excellent. So we're going to read that next time. And if you want to read it before then I recommend that. Thanks to the Sentimental Favorites for letting us use their song Hey There for our theme song.
Thanks, guys.
And Charlie McCarron, who is a composer and runs a podcast called Composer Quest that I like a lot, created a little jingle that I used last time. And I'm not going to play the whole thing again, but there's a little sting at the end of it, which I think I'll use in every episode. So thanks to Charlie for letting us use that. And thanks. Thank you, Carrie. It's been great to talk to you.
It is so great to talk to you. I love talking about books, and I love talking about books with you because I love you. You're fantastic, and this is so much fun.
It's a lot of fun. We didn't swear hardly at all this time, I feel like.
I know, hardly at all. I did call him a giant penis, though, or a walking penis.
Oh, well, that's not swearing, though. No, that's just accurate.
That's not swearing. That is very accurate.
Give me a call when you get back. Hey there.
Hey.
TheWhyIsThatCrazy.com